Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, who was the biggest winner of the weekend? We'll talk about the Western Derby because they're not in the Eastern States, and Frio's skills hurting them again. Should teams have a concussion sub, and is Good Friday good for football?
That was out of bounds!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. Tuesday morning, which means it is time for the Duff and Quarters podcast, edition one of this week. We are talking about the wash-up from round four. And unlike another network, which had two shows last night, we'll actually talk about the Western Derby.
Was there a Western Derby on, Duff?
Well, not according to Foxtel's On the Couch and 360. It didn't rate a mention in 120 minutes of football discussion last night.
Mm.
Second biggest crowd of the weekend, the biggest football event in Western Australia. I would have thought that it was worth talking about if you want to keep your WA subscribers happy. But anyway, we will.
We will certainly
talk. And we'll also, because not everybody that listens to our podcast barracks for West Coast and Fremantle, we will talk about all the other games too, Glenn.
Which brings me to my first point, Duff. Who was your biggest winner over the weekend? Because there were a few very big winners over the weekend.
I'm not even going to try and differentiate between GWS and Richmond. I thought that both of those victories were all-time great home and away victories.
Yeah, I'd agree. Melbourne was obviously a very timely win and a win they needed to have.
Yeah.
I think GWS going down to Geelong's very hard, and particularly hard this year given the way that Geelong's playing. I thought that was a real... I have my doubts about GWS pre-season, and again, they've lost another soldier in Ward. I was worried about the talent being, or the midfield talent being diluted, but I'll tell you what, they're turning me around pretty quickly, GWS. That was a really impressive win, and Richmond, minus their leadership group, going over there and winning. Extraordinary effort. I agree. I think it's pretty hard to split those two wins. Last week, we were talking about Richmond and saying that this is what defines a club. It's not when things are going well, it's when things are going difficult that defines a club, and we might have seen the turning point for Richmond's year last weekend.
Yeah, I still think they've got their work cut out to be a serious contender. I mean, you just can't lose a player of Rance's quality and have to redo your whole defensive system around that, and he was critical to that system. Dylan Grimes played one of the great quarters of football, I thought, in the last quarter against against Port Adelaide.
Probably a bit of a statement too, Duff, having missed a week.
Took
probably,
about probably, four or five intercept marks.
Yeah, probably wanted to put his hand up and say, look, you know, sorry about that. It's pretty, they don't need players out at the moment, and Dusty will be the same this week, I think you'll find.
Yeah, hopefully. I hope they get a spike from Dusty because he owes them a bit. But mind you, they responded in exactly the right way. They got, what a game from Tommy Lynch.
Oh, yeah.
Six goals.
Let's call it five and plus one.
Five plus one. Oh, yes.
They push in the back after he goal. I'm not sure. It's a pretty, look, it's a dumb, it was a dumb action. It was a dumb action, and particularly in these times when you're going to get pinged for most things. So but that's a really harsh penalty.
If they paid that as a kick, how did they not pay the one when Pal Pepper ran over?
I mean, and they're having a shot for goal when Pal Pepper executes that. How dumb. Sorry, Pal Pepper, but that was just dumb, really. I mean, imagine Kenny Hinckley if that's reversed.
They love the niggle port.
Yeah.
They really do. When Sydney Stack kicked it out on the full and that turned around and became a goal for Port Adelaide, they went after Sydney Stack. Didn't bother Sydney Stack too much.
Yeah.
Took a great intercept mark a bit later on. Was involved in the play, stayed involved in the play, stayed brave.
And hasn't he just had a great start to his career at AFL level, Sydney Stack?
Two very good games. The thing I liked about GWS quarters was often when you have a win like that over a team that's got an absolute fortress, in the end you're hanging on. They were coming over the top of them, GWS. They had totally steamrolled Geelong's midfield. They'd gotten total control of the game.
Yeah, they did. They sort of got control in the first half and then got it on their terms in the second half. That's how I'd describe that game.
And I thought that had that game gone 15 minutes longer, I got the feeling that GWS were going to win that going away, not that Geelong were going to come back and pinch it. Let's get on to the derby.
Yeah.
Given the lack of discussion for punters over the last 24 hours. My take on it, not a pretty game, but a very good contest. Two things to come out of it. I think West Coast has got some work to do. I think that in two or three of their games this year, so they've played four, they've won three, but I would argue in three of their games, they've been a fair bit off in certain areas of the game. So,
but still managed to win, Duff, which is the key.
Well, they're a very efficient team, yeah, aren't they? I thought Fremantle actually completely ate into their efficiency and their skill level.
For three quarters.
But Fremantle didn't have the skills to hurt them.
Well, and this is a recurring theme.
It is.
Fremantle's skills. And this is every year we seem to say, when are they going to
And I listened to Ross talk about this after the game, and he said, well, skill development is largely on the individuals. Well, it's not left to the individuals at West Coast. At West Coast, we only see two teams train. We watch West Coast train and we watch Fremantle train. When we watch West Coast train, and I acknowledge there are great sections of the week when we don't get to see them train, so we don't know what we're doing or what they're doing in those periods of time. So it may be that West Coast only practices skills when we're watching and they practice structure at other times, because they are very well structured and their defensive structure was a key to their victory on the weekend. And it may be that Fremantle practices structure when we're watching them and they practice skill when we're not watching them,
No, I suspect not.
And I think that they have to take this out of the players' hands and they need to say, this is one thing we need to improve. This is costing us wins and also costing credibility. That's the thing, because as brave as Fremantle were, and they were mighty on the weekend, to come back from, that game looked like it was going to be split wide open.
It did in the first 15-20, yes.
At quarter time, and to get a toehold, to come back into it, to get within three kicks twice in the last quarter and still be coming at the end. Fremantle's effort was mighty. But until you fix the other stuff, you can't go very far. And something needs to be done about it. And the thing that bothers me about it is that a lot of the skill deficiencies are correctable. So Matt Taberner has a high ball drop. Brad Hill tends to lurch back off his kicks. He misses targets. And the other thing about it, quarters, is that they actually make it harder for their teammates. When West Coast spots up a target and hits a guy lace out, they're making life a bit easier for their teammate.
Yeah.
Freo does the opposite. So at one point in the game, Rory Lobb had the ball on the outer side of the ground. Jesse Hogan gave a 70-metre lead to Rory Lobb and presented an uncontested target on the wing. And Rory Lobb kicked the ball basically straight up in the air. And Josh Rotham got a fist in on a contest about 15 metres in front of Jesse Hogan, and the ball went back inside and West Coast went forward and kicked a goal. So, Fremantle wants to get Jesse Hogan involved in the game. They want the ball in his hands to make him feel good, to make him give him confidence, so that hopefully he'll do better. Rory Lobb's just denied him the ball by kicking it poorly. And that's apologies to Rory Lobb for singling him out, because that's just a tale that gets told over and over and over again at Fremantle. They make it more difficult for their teammates.
There's very few teams win when you're 1-9 at halftime.
Yeah.
Simple as that, really. Yeah. I mean, 2-3 to Taberner. I mean, you've got to convert, you've got to turn that into a 4-1. He's got to start doing that. Otherwise, and it was a game, it was a tale of two captains too at the weekend. Mighty efforts from both captains, Shannon Hearn winning his third Glendinning Allan medal. And, of course, David Mundy, a Herculean effort in trying to drag him across the line. And we're closing in on that 300-game mark too, and for him to be still sustaining that effort is an incredible performance, really. And as we keep saying, Duff, if he's playing in Melbourne, he's a superstar. I mean, we regard him as a superstar over here, but I just don't think he gets the acknowledgement that he deserves.
Well, if you want to know the sort of stature that David Mundy has, there's only been one player so far that's made it to 300 from this side of the Nullarbor, and that was Matthew Pavlich. And Mundy's, barring something dramatic this weekend, Mundy will become the second. He's a terrific player. Despite the result of the game, he would have been my Glendinning Allan medalist. As good as Shannon Hearn was, I thought Mundy was the player that took the game and actually shifted its direction after quarter time.
Yeah.
And, 10 clearances, 36 disposals, 23 of them in contests. The other one, I think, from Fremantle that's worthy of great mention, even though his skills need a tidy up as well, was young Andy Brayshaw.
Yeah.
I thought he was fantastic. You know, 14 contested possessions. When Fremantle really got on the hunt after quarter time and when they decided, let's turn this into the fiercest contest that West Coast has faced this year, I thought Brayshaw was as fierce as any of them at the contest, won a lot of ground ball.
And kudos to Matera as well. I thought his effort was great for the second week in a row. So perhaps he's turned the corner as well. Let's hope. We spoke about maybe it's a turning point for Richmond. Let's hope that that is a turning point for Freo in terms of, you know, line in the sand. Let's move forward now. Of course, the one area is skill. But going forward, we may look back on that game.
And from West Coast perspective, interesting little tactic out of the centre square. They were often freeing up the ruckman to go out the front end of the square, knowing that there'd be close attention paid to their gun mids. I thought that was interesting. I think there were about three or four times when Vardy or Hickey strolled out the front. They always used the ball badly, but they were the ones going out the front of the square. Yeah. So I thought that was – I wondered whether that could possibly have been coincidence happening that often. And I think we have to give some kudos to Andrew Gaff too, because turned up, was the focus of a lot of attention. There's a lot of cheering. There's a lot of booing. Yeah. There was booing and cheering on social media for the booing and cheering. It was clearly the players just want this over and done with. They want to move on. But the fans...
Probably one more to go, I think. And I mean, there'll still be an element of it going forward. I think there always is in footy. But I think we're getting through it. And I think there is still one derby to go where there may be a bit of voice. But
there'll
be Freo's home game.
Fair bit of voice at that one.
Look, I agree. Both players, really. Both players.
They covered themselves in glory.
I think so. The way they handled it.
And that was to their credit. Let's talk about St Kilda.
Do we have to? Sunday's game. Look, great effort by St Kilda. There was obviously some extenuating circumstances. Hawthorn lost a couple. The point I wanted to raise about this game is, do you think it's time for a concussion sub?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and it's taking the pressure off getting that player getting that injured player back on the field. So I think there was a great argument for it at the weekend.
But quarters, I reckon, as the rider for that, if you're going to have a concussion sub, then a concussion has to be a mandatory week out of the game.
I agree.
Because you can't have coaches manipulating it to
happily
get a
go
fresh
along with
player
that.
In. So basically, if a player comes out concussed, he misses the next week.
See, my thoughts, I'd stretch it to two even.
Yeah.
I mean, just to make sure. I would even stretch it that far. But, you know, Stratton, obviously, and Frawley was a huge loss. St Kilda had their outs too. They had Geary out. They haven't got Carlisle in that defence. So, you know, I think St Kilda had some... look, it was a great effort. Not a particularly good game to watch, but a little subplot to come out of that is the good form from Scrimshaw at Hawthorn. He actually... So the game was played for the Silk Miller Cup, which is named after the two policemen who were killed in Melbourne in that ambush attack.
Yeah.
And so Scrimshaw's grown up best mates with Miller's son. So there's a nice little subplot to it. He played his heart out. It was a bit of a, wanted to put his hand up in that game, so well done. The Saints I'm still wary on. I'm not sure that they're
still... Well, that was going to be my next question. Yeah. So 2 years ago, St Kilda were a team pushing to come into the eight. And you remember that game, I think it was round 18 at Marvel Stadium, and they flogged Richmond, and we thought, this is it for the Saints. And then they barely gave a yelp for the rest of the season. And then they were mediocre last year. Are St Kilda, they're 3-1.
Yes.
Are St Kilda better than we thought?
I'm not sure. What I do like about them is those players that we've talked about for a few years now who aren't quite A-grade level, you know, your Rosses, your Billings, these players, your Greshams, they're starting to produce more four-quarter efforts and week to week. So that's definitely a tick for St Kilda. I'm not sure who they've beaten so far, and I include Hawthorn in that. I mean, you look at who Hawthorn's beaten, Adelaide, who is struggling, and North Melbourne, who is struggling. So I'm not convinced with Hawthorn either. Look, I think you can't do 3-1's a pretty good start, but I'll reserve my judgment for St Kilda. I still don't see them as a top eight side.
Okay. Are your boys a top eight side?
I think they're eighth, as I've said all along. I'm waiting to... Players back will help. I mean, you look at... There's no... So there were two players in their first choice midfield at the weekend. So Warple and Scully, who's coming, you know, is improving week to week. So you get Burgoyne, Shields, you get O'Meara back in that side. It's a completely different look. I still
O'Meara was a massive out on the weekend, wasn't he?
Massive out. I still think that they're capable of squeezing into the back end of the eight. One of the things that's interesting is the you can hear the frustration in Alistair Clarkson's voice. He's very almost disembodied. His power has been diluted in what he can do at the weekend, both through the advent of the 666 and also
and the runners.
The runners. And you can see he said, I think his comments were they were a bit lost. Coaches are a bit lost at the moment. So it's really interesting. His power has been diluted. There's not much he can do during the course of a game, particularly when a team gets a run on. So, you know, I'm not surprised by the result. And I certainly as soon as O'Meara was out. But, look, well done to St Kilda. I hope that for their supporters' sake, the run continues.
So let's talk about the drama at Metricon.
Oh. I ended up with three, Duff, and, you know,
you
I was
the Blues,
just,
didn't you?
I did. And I was 13 seconds out and a couple of dumb decisions out. So what is McGovern doing, for a start? Mitch McGovern running off the defensive, the goal line. Secondly, Paddy Dow, what are you thinking? You're going inside, not out to a runner who's free. And I'm going to give Mark Murphy the benefit of the doubt. The little dribble kick along the ground with seconds remaining. Have a ping, son. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. It's fatigue, or I'm not sure if he was looking for a short pass. To me, it's just have a ping at that state of the game.
I'll tell you what, they're not real clever footballers either, are they? I think it was Joyce.
Alan Joyce?
No, Jesse Joyce.
Jesse Joyce, yes.
Is it Jesse Joyce? The young defender from Gold Coast.
Yeah, I think you're right, yep.
A fraction of the second after the siren goes, he hears the siren, and he just hacks at the ball and kicks it out on the
floor. He did too, yes, I did notice that,
If the umpire hadn't heard the siren...
That's out in the full and a shot at goal.
Out in the full and shot at goal.
Which I'm assuming Carlton don't make, given the events of the preceding 5 minutes. But I could just, sitting there, I was just, this is not going to end well. I just did not like the look of it. And Bolton was in tears in the rooms after the game because he knew that's just, it must be frustrating at times.
I think it's frustrating because you know that whether you win or lose that game doesn't change a lot about how you're going about it and so therefore how much you're getting right and how much you're getting wrong generally.
Yeah.
But it makes the world of difference politically for a
coach. Of course it does.
If he gets to 1-3.
You need wins.
And he can point to the fact that they've competed strongly in a couple of other games. He can hang his hat on that. But when you're zipping four,
yeah,
and then when you're down that end of the ladder, sooner or later you're going to come up against a West Coast or a Geelong meaning business or a GWS in Sydney, and you're going to absolutely get your clock cleaned, and then people are going to start screaming for your head.
Well, you tell me what's the better list, Carlton or Gold Coast at the moment?
I think Carlton's.
Yeah, they're 3-1. So Gold Coast.
I know.
So I'm just saying that currency, the only currency for coaches is victories.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. So they've had time now to rejuvenate that list, and I've been supportive of Brendan Bolton, but he needs some wins and he needs them quickly.
Well, they are young though, and this is we come back to this thing where how long does it take a player to mature at AFL level? And we all look at
50, 70. Yeah.
We all look at the Chris Judds and those guys that just stepped straight up and played well straight away. But the reality is it's their third and fourth seasons when they start to really have an impact. So you look at a Paddy Dow, who we've looked at and we said, why the hell did he turn in instead of turning out? He's a second-year player. You look at McKay, who's forward and keeps on running where the ball isn't.
Yeah.
Instead of being – and he's taken umpteen contested marks when he's been in the right spot, but he keeps on being in the wrong spot.
Curnow's a similar
story. Curnow's still a very young player. And then, you know, down the other end, they've got youth as well. Through the middle, Petrescu Seaton, young.
Yeah.
Even Paddy Cripps as a leader is a very, very young player for the responsibility that gets thrown on his
We should
shoulders.
Mention Sam Walsh. He's got his Rising Star nomination round four, so we expected that to happen.
Do we give him the medal now?
No, I wouldn't give him the medal yet.
No?
No. He's
If he stays fit, he's winning the medal.
Probably.
Quarters.
Yeah, let's see what happens. I guess we should mention Bowes too, kicking that goal with 13 seconds remaining. He's had a good month. He's had a good opening month of the season.
So he has played on Nathan Fyfe, Marcus Bontempelli and Paddy Cripps.
And done pretty good jobs.
That's a great trifecta. And I wouldn't say he's beaten any of them, but he's competed very strongly with all of them. And he's a young player that really is making a mark for himself. And I think he's only a second or third year player as well.
So he is.
He's an incredibly impressive young player, I think. Another one, Quarters, we talked this guy up a bit on this show, and I'm going to give him a bit of a clip. Alex Sexton. It's okay to share the ball, Alex.
Yeah.
You don't have to take a shot every time.
Two at the weekend, another two. So he's still getting the goals. Yeah, fair enough. I think he's...
Kicked two very good goals, and he butchered teammates two or three times.
Is that a result of being at the Gold Coast for so long and just wanting to rely on your own skill? He knows he can kick him and not having enough confidence in those around him. Could be a bit of that about
it. I think when Jack Bowes had helped get the ball to him and then busted his guts to run another 50 metres on to be 40 metres in the clear, 30 metres out from goal in the pocket.
Share it.
I think Jack Bowes gave him a monumental cook when he just completely ignored him and took a shot himself. So I reckon he got some feedback from his teammates.
So on to Saturday, Richmond and Port Adelaide, we spoke a little bit out of it earlier, but I just wanted to ask you, Nathan Drew, Himmelberg or Crozier, who was your mark of the round?
Willem Drew, Himmelberg or Crozier.
Sorry, Willem Drew, yes.
It's Himmelberg for me. I get the feeling that when Drew's running for that ball, he knows that the guy on the other end is standing still. That doesn't mean it's not brave, incredibly brave, incredible effort to take it. Crozier, we all know Crozier can stand on people's heads. He's been doing it since
he was... It's still difficult to stand on people's heads, though.
Yeah, no, he did it again at the weekend, took a great one. He was about two stories up.
Yeah.
The Himmelberg one, he is going flat knacker...
Into two or three players.
With the flight of the ball into a marking contest where he knows they're coming towards him and he has no idea what they is. Like, it might be one player, it might be two players, it might be a midfielder, it might be a flanker, it might be a key position player, it might be a ruckman. To me, Himmelberg's was extraordinary courage, extraordinary athleticism.
And their statement acts too, Duff. We saw how GWS played at the weekend. Their statement acts, they lift everyone around you when you see that sort of action.
Callum Ward. When you see a bloke like Callum Ward, a bloke whose nickname is Cementhead because he's so tough, when you see that bloke crying on the bench... after another knee injury, you realise what this game means and how brutal
and scenes, him speaking to the players at three-quarter time as well, just to inspire them, get them over the line. Yeah, yeah, it's a real pity. He's a sort of a favourite of everyone, isn't he? He sort of crosses supporter lines, that player.
Yeah, if you don't have a soft spot for Callum Ward, you might want to check yourself for a pulse, I think, because he's he plays the game the way... We would love to see the game played.
Richmond, obviously we spoke about them earlier, a bit more like the old Tiger pressure. They get a few players back this week, including Rewalt. But I think Port still had 19 inside 50s in the last quarter. So they had their chances. Even though Richmond was gallant, great effort by Richmond, Port still had their chances.
Yeah, but that's a bit the story with Port, isn't it? They don't connect well with their forwards. In fairness to them, no Charlie Dixon at the moment. So if you're looking at... not getting a result when the ball goes inside 50, the lack of a Charlie Dixon is a factor. But you've still got Justin Westhoff out there somewhere. You've still got Paddy Ryder out there somewhere.
Yeah.
You've got Scott Lysette out there somewhere. You've got players who can give you a target to kick to, and you've got Robbie Gray in and around them. So really, I think they should have made more of their last quarter opportunities.
Robbie Gray hasn't had a great start to the year.
No, well, he was on Dylan Grimes in that last quarter, which just... further elevates the quarter of football that Dylan Grimes played.
North Melbourne finally got up for a win over the Crows. All sorts of problems there. Could have done with Gibbs and Greenwood at the weekend.
Greenwood's the interesting one. Like Gibbs...
Both went okay in the Sandful too.
Yeah, well, Bryce Gibbs could get 30 in his sleep in the Sandful. But why doesn't he influence games at AFL level? He runs around, he gets the ball, he tends to kick the ball very well. But the real... good games that Bryce Gibbs has played over the years, and he played most of them at Carlton, but when he got outside of his comfort zone, he extended himself, he pushed forward, he kicked goals, he won contested possessions. I don't think he does that often enough.
Yeah. He's got a few mates in that Adelaide side, though.
Josh Jenkins?
Well, not just Josh.
What?
But there were some really worrying signs for Don Pike in that game, because even if you're not winning, you still expect effort, and there's not a lot of effort out there at the moment. It's really concerning for Adelaide. I still think it's the line in the sand for them in the wrong way was the start of last year. And they went from being a grand finalist the previous year to this brain implosion pre-season. And I think it's just disengaged the players. I think they've got real issues there.
Well, you might be right.
Well, what other explanation is it?
Well, they're old.
Oh, yeah, but you can be old and still give effort, though.
Taylor Walker looks as slow as treacle.
Geez, that was a nice pass, though.
The left footer.
Oh, yeah, it was nice. He can kick it.
194 centimetres. You can hit a bloke
65
off.
Metres of cutting the daisies off the grass and hitting a bloke laced out. It's not bad.
Pretty good. But
every now and then, that's the thing about him. Every now and then he does that, and then he disappears for two quarters. And
but
then
I don't reckon. So, okay. Yeah, that's great. He's got a great skill level for a 194, 195 centimetre player. But he's a 194, 195 centimetre player. He's got to be posting up. He's got to be giving a contest when the ball comes in high. He's got to be getting it at his feet so that Eddie Betts and Wayne Miller and these other players can get to work. And neither he nor Jenkins do that often enough.
Yeah, Jenkins even more so, I think.
I think that...
I'll have Taylor Walker before Josh Jenkins.
Yeah, me too. Mm. Yeah, I mean, Taylor Walker's your captain and he's in the team. But they've got a massive decision to make on Josh Jenkins.
Well, they've got a massive decision to make on leadership too, because there just doesn't seem to be any out there at the moment.
And I wonder whether, Quarters, they were a ball movement team and they could slice you up. And when that happens, there's a lot of uncontested possession. And they used to do it off halfback, and they used to do it with run, and they'd do it with daring kicking and that sort of thing. When that dries up, and that's the habit your players have developed. You know, I don't have to be in a pack taking a contested mark. I can get out on my own and take it lace out in front of my eyes. And then suddenly you can't, because that kick has dried up and you've got to go to a pack and you've got to try and take a contested mark. The other comment I'd make about them is that the one player in that forward line, in their forward line of the last two or three years, who was the flyer for the pack mark was Mitch McGovern. He was the one that could take the hanger.
They've lost Cameron too, so they've lost a bit of speed and dazzle from that forward line.
Mm.
We're probably not giving North due credit. They've lifted their contest and possession over the, I think they were shocking round one. They were poor round two, but they have improved round three, and I think they're 12 plus now. So they've got that area right.
They turned their game around, didn't
and
they?
And Ben Brown, from the outset, like the first tackle of the game, I think he reacted to a bit of, I think, probably unfair criticism of him. I don't think he was solely to blame. He's playing a lone hand up there early in the season. It was really difficult for him. And coupled with the delivery into him, I think it was a bit harsh, but he made a statement at the weekend and four goals on the board. The player who makes a big difference to them too is Jed Anderson. Now, he's a player who Hawthorn discarded, and I think he really makes a difference to that midfield as well. So, you know, I'm not saying, look out, here comes North Melbourne, but it was good. They got the win on the board. They've gradually, incrementally improved over the 4 weeks, and hopefully there's a bit of joy ahead for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I don't look at North Melbourne and see a diabolical team. So for them to be 0-3 before the weekend was a bit of an anomaly for me. And for them to get out of that game on the weekend with a win, I think was pretty critical. Sydney, I'm off the Swans.
Yeah, I'm off.
They've cost me about four tips.
Yeah, I've jumped off. So, they've cost me four tips as well.
So
they just look. They look. They call it transition. I'm just calling it slow and old.
Mm.
I think, and the kids coming up, who are now, some of them aren't kids. There's...
Well, okay, who isn't a kid?
Well, Heaney's not a kid.
Yeah, but... The
Mills
about,
isn't really a kid, are they, anymore?
No, I'm prepared to say Mills is still young. Mm-hmm. Mills missed pretty much all of last year with a serious leg injury, so in football terms, he's still young. The real problem for them, Quarters, is that those are their two best young players, no doubt.
Florent goes all right as well.
Florent's okay. But Florent, of those three, Florent's the only one you could really say is a genuine mid. So there's a feeling at Sydney that Heaney is a great mid-size forward, but not a genuine mid. And there's a feeling that Mills is a half-back intercept player and not a genuine mid. And their midfield is tired.
And there's a feeling Zach Jones may go as well. I think St Kilda are having a ping at him at the end of this year. So... real concerns for them. You know, Buddy.
St Kilda are going to try and trade Hanbury back, are they?
Well, there's talk mid-year for him, so it's probably a...
What, mid-year 2020?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, look, I mean, what's there to like about Sydney? There's you know, you've got Buddy there, you've got Alira at the other end, but...
Okay, so what do they need?
Well, they need pace in the midfield. They need youth and pace in the midfield. That would help them a lot. So I think they're going to have to draft, they're going to have to trade, they're going to have to not lose players. I think there's still, shocking word culture, but there's still a good culture there. They're still well coached. But they've been at the coalface for a long time. I expected them to be sort of 7th, 8th. I thought they'd go one way and GWS the other, but clearly at this after round 4, I'm not right there.
No, there's still a critical mass of talent at GWS, isn't there? As much as has left,
and they've got one important player back in Mumford. I think he's someone we didn't mention earlier. He's made a big difference to them. He was whacking Geelong blokes around too at the weekend.
Well,
every chance he got.
I was going to say that the people that do notice that Mummy's around are the opposition.
Yeah,
Rory Lubb may need danger money this week, having left the club to go and play for Fremantle, and he's up against Mummy this week.
So given what we saw from Sydney, you know, I'm not convinced that Melbourne's turned the corner. It's a win, and that always helps. It was a win led on the back of Nathan Jones, but I'm still not convinced that midfield's really humming. Gawn gave them a lot of the footy, and I'm just not. Melbourne's still got a fair way to go, I reckon.
I love Jason. I love Nathan Jones's game.
Yeah, just come up, stand up, and walk with me. You know, I'm going to lead you here. So it was a great effort. I just think there's a lot of questions still to be answered at Melbourne. Essendon. So I guess the pop of the bubble at Brisbane, just for, at least for 1 week. I still think they'll be pretty hard to beat this year. There's probably, as Chris Fagan acknowledges, probably. Not surprising that they had a pretty poor game. But gee, McDonald, Tip and Woody, seven goals. It was a good effort. I think Essendon, you know, my pre-season tip was that they'd finish top two. So they've got a fair way to go before they do that. But
they've got back to 2-2. So
yeah, they have. And
they've
righted the ship. And Joey Danaher's on the cusp. I think the players you expect, Hurley down back is playing terrific footy. You know, I think the players, they've got it. It looks like the bookends are right. Looks like the midfield's buying in now. So the elements are slowly coming together. Could be a really slow build, but a really good result at the end for Essendon, I think.
Are you looking forward to the Easter round of footy? Do you like Good Friday football?
Love it. I do. I think, obviously, for religious reasons, some people are hesitant to embrace it. But I think you can still... there's no reason you can't practice whatever faith you have and then go off to the footy afterwards. I think footy's a celebration of all sorts of religions and beliefs, and I don't see why the two can't work hand in hand. I do have one concern over Good Friday footy. Obviously, we're embracing it in WA for the first time. It has been a real good money spinner for the Waffle, and I just hope that it's not doesn't eat into that.
Detract from that.
Yeah, look, they've been going since 2011 at Waffle level, and they've got good Friday crowds. Two games this week. One starts, I think, at 1. One starts at 4:30. So that may be affected. But I'm a big fan of Good Friday. I'd play footy any day of the year, mate. You know that. I love it.
20 years ago, you would have anyway.
Yeah, that's right. just a couple of and the other game we haven't mentioned, Collingwood. 14-point winners over the Western Bulldogs at the MCG. Strange old game, Duff. It was almost played between the 50-metre arcs in the first quarter.
It was like soccer.
And they were on track if they didn't hit a record of uncontested marks, Collingwood. It was a strange game.
Yeah, I think Nathan Buckley acknowledged afterwards that there'd been an overcorrection, that they tried to move to a more possession-based game, and that they basically their players, he said his players are very literal in the way they receive his coaching. And he said basically they'd taken what he had said to them absolutely literally, as opposed to trying to integrate it into their game. The other thing I'd say about Collingwood at the moment is that, one, I reckon that even though Beams didn't play on the weekend, I think the inclusion of Beams and Elliott hasn't been as smooth as we – because it's kind of changed what they were good about.
Changed the dynamic. And they've got almost got one too many good midfielders. I know that sounds strange – but there's almost too many. They'll get it right. That's a quality list. They will get it right, and they're winning. A bit of work to do.
What they've got in their midfield quarters is they've got a lot of players who accumulate a lot of possession, but not all of them are great ball users. And what we're seeing opposition teams do is they're specifically targeting the ball users and leaving the not-so-great ball users to send the ball forward. And as a result of this, I don't think there's, at the moment, there's not a great connection between Collingwood's midfield and their forward. So Pendlebury gets tagged, Sidebottom gets tagged, and as the year goes on, when Beams comes back in, he'll get tagged as well. I wonder whether Daniel Wells may be a very important player.
Well, he's always been the X factor from them, that really important player.
Because he uses the ball really
and he's
well.
The fourth, so you can't tag them all. But it's just the old story, getting him out in the park.
But Taylor Adams wins a mountain of possession. It's not a great kick. Jack Crisp wins a lot of the ball.
Treloar.
Not a great kick. Treloar's not a great kick. Chris Mayne, who got hurt early the other night, wins a lot of possession. But I wouldn't say Chris Mayne's a turnover merchant, because he's not, but he's a very safe kick. He doesn't cut holes in the opposition team. He's very conservative with his ball movement. So I think that's going to be a challenge for them. And I think Wells might be, as you said, the X factor that changes all that up.
Brings it all together.
Because you might be able to tag Sidebottom and put him somewhere. You might be able to reduce Pendlebury's influence on the game. But if Wells is still in there somewhere carving you up, then they're going to have great connectivity and they're going to be very
It's
hard
a long
to stop.
Year, and I think it's all the work in progress. And obviously with the new rules, coaches are finding their way. So I think as long as you're not losing too many at this time of year, I think we said a month into the season we'll be able to make some sort of a judgment. I don't think we can. I think it's going to be 6 to 8 weeks before we can make some sort of a judgment.
I reckon there's about 8 teams in there right now. I don't know where they're at.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And those teams could be anywhere from 6 to 14 on the ladder for me.
I think we know West Coast will be in the chop-up. I think we know GWS will be in the chop-up, and I think we definitely know Collingwood will be in the chop-up.
And probably Geelong as well.
And probably Geelong. Yeah. I say probably. I'd have them behind those three.
And there's a big, big chasing pack, as big as the packs chasing Winks and Tiger Woods.
Oh, what a great weekend for sport it was, wasn't it?
It was fantastic.
Emotion charged, that Tiger Woods, just the I think we're all watching to see what the reaction would be when it fell into the cup.
It was feral.
It was, reaction. Wasn't it? That was good.
You don't often hear a chant.
Won't catch Jack, though.
Jack's always going to be your favourite?
I think he won't
get to 18.
I don't think he'll get to 18. I think it was a magnificent. I'm glad he won that. Mm. I just think he's done more for golf than anyone post-Jack or Arnie. But I'm glad. It was a good win. And Winks, what a great day.
Mm.
And I'm glad she's retired.
Yep.
Let her go to the paddock, have some fun.
Loved your column too, by the way, in the Sunday Times.
Yeah,
the heir to the throne.
The five stallions who are waiting at the stable door, the red light's on.
Right, thank you very much for joining us this morning. We have been brought to you by Tab Touch. We will be back on Thursday to preview the Easter AFL round. Look forward to your company then, and hopefully you tipped well. And hopefully your team will go well in round 5.